I know it's early in the season and everything, but that one stung a little bit. Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleese, and you, of course, had the call. It's interesting. I was watching some highlights this morning.
Yeah.
And so on the highlights, they had the Warrior call.
Right.
I, of course, was watching you. But Bob Fitzgerald, during the highlights, was talking about how, wow, Dub Nation's awfully quiet in here. So that's one of the things that hurts. The Kings really had the Warriors on their heels last night.
They did. I thought the Kings played an excellent game. And, you know, I don't know about Bob Fitzgerald. I thought, you know, the first half it might have been a little quiet, but that fourth quarter, that crowd was on its feet. It felt like a playoff game. Honestly, I didn't know Chase Center could get that loud. I was shocked that their fan base brought it the way they did, because the first half, you know, they were a late arriving crowd as well. And I'm like, you know, but that second half, they were flowing and Steph got going just a little bit and the crowd got into it. And it sure was a November 1st regular season game. But you could feel it, Whitey. You could feel it inside that building. That game meant more, not only to the players, but to the fan base also.
Yeah, well, you remember that preseason game. Everybody really wanted to win that.
Right.
That one didn't even count. So, yeah, huge opportunity loss for the Kings, of course. Without De'Aaron Fox, they didn't make enough shots. But I'm choosing to be more encouraged by how they defended than discouraged by the fact that They let one slip through their fingers.
Let me ask you this, though, because I understand the defense. You hold them to 102 points, turn them over 18 times, but the Warriors still shot 48% from the field. They still hit 35.5% from the field three-point range. And so I thought the defense, yes, it was better, no doubt about it, but I'd rather that number 43% Warriors shooting. You know what I mean? Like, they competed hard. Give them no doubt about that. I thought, especially in that third quarter, when they held them to, 18
That's
points,
right.
I think it was. That was a huge quarter defensively for the Kings. The problem is the Kings couldn't score. But in that third quarter alone, the Warriors shot only 30% from the field in that third quarter. But yet they shot 48% for the game. And so then you look at the fourth quarter. I got the box score right in front of me. The Warriors shot 55%. And so that's, you know, that's what Mike Brown is talking. It was a great defensive effort, yes, but you got to be more consistent with it. And to allow them to shoot 55%, you only shoot 33% in the fourth. That's your game right there.
Yeah, they defended better against the Lakers, but to do that against the Lakers and then last night without Fox,
right,
to have at times an inspired defensive effort, there are some encouraging signs there. But, of course, you lose a game where you don't have enough offense and no De'Aaron Fox, but that wasn't really the problem. They just, De'Aaron Fox or not, they just missed so many shots, and a lot of them were, for the Kings, very makeable shots.
So many open looks, so many good looks. So many looks around the basket as well. Sacramento, 11 of 35 last night when it comes to three-point shooting. They got to be better, right? If you're going to beat the Warriors, 31% isn't going to get it done. But then I also look at, you know, points in the paint. The Kings were 19 of 41 in the paint.
Yeah, they missed
That's
a lot
less
lot
than
of shots
50%
right at the rack.
In the paint. And so, to your point, you're right. You know, shots that you normally make, shots that, you know, Keegan Murray, I loved his confidence. Sure, the shots weren't falling, but he took a lot of good shots. They just weren't going down. And it's the second time this season that we've seen that. Because Friday at home against the Warriors, you know, I thought they competed hard defensively. They just didn't make shots in that game outside of De'Aaron Fox.
Domas, of course, had 23 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists. He felt the need to shoulder more of the offensive responsibility. And after the game last night, he talked about Klay's game-winning shot and what Domas saw as that unfolded.
You know, it's a tough play when you have Steph on the court. You know, our goal, our coaches were yelling at us to hit Steph, which means get the ball out of his hands and make someone else make a play, and hit a good shot. You know, I feel like Davion was there. You know, Klay just shot above it and knocked it down.
Yeah, even on that play, I mean, they got the ball out of Steph's hands.
Right. But, you know, on that final play by Klay Thompson, and I love Davion. He's my guy. But Klay Thompson's 6'6". Davion 6'2". And I think at that point, Davion's size hurt him in that, like, Klay could just shoot right over him. Great shot by Klay. Davion gave it all he could, But that's what happens when you have a 6'2 guy guarding a 6'6 guy. And so tip your hat to Clay. I don't think Davion could have done anything differently on that possession. It was just a great shot, a big-time shot by Clay Thompson.
Mm-hmm. We talked yesterday about how important it was for Davion to play well. And again, not making excuses. I know they lost, but he really had his moments last night, hit 3 of 6 three-pointers. He had a very nice game. That's another encouraging sign.
Yes, you talk about the – and I would say maybe the most encouraging sign. I thought Davion really came out and set the tone in that game. He knocked down back-to-back threes to start the game. You know, started out 6-0. He scored the first 6 points for the Sacramento Kings, played close to 30 minutes, 13 points, 5 of 9 shooting. I would like a little more even from Davion. Like, you know, I think we said yesterday, 10 to 15 shots a game. He only shot 9. But I thought he was perfect in that game, you know, especially defensively too. They had him guarding a little bit of everybody. He guarded some Steph. He guarded Clay. He even guarded Draymond Green as well. And so those are tough assignments, especially he's not used to guarding a guy Draymond size, and I thought he did a good job in that second half.
Yeah, I was watching that, and I noticed at some point, hey, what, Davion's guarding Draymond.
Right.
First I thought, oh, there was a switch or something, but then I realized, kept watching it, and it was like Chris Watkins suggested. I think they did that, Mike Brown did that, to negate the effect of Draymond setting screens on Steph's man.
Yeah.
So, and that was brilliant strategy.
Yeah, brilliant, and you like the length of Keegan Murray
right.
on Steph. I thought Keegan did a hell of a job. Steph Curry, as great as he is, you know, he 7 of 15 shooting, but he had 7 turnovers last night.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, that's high-level defense, I thought.
Where was Keegan, that in game right. 7,
we
Kyle?
We needed that.
Just a little bit
just
of that.
A little bit of that. Only 21 points for Steph. But he, like I said, he turned it over 7 times. And so I think the length, the size and the length of Keegan actually bothered Steph Curry last night.
Yeah. So there's it's a number of ways you can look at it after last night. I think, though, we can agree on this. You go into Houston, and you got, what, Portland coming up?
Yeah.
You
got to
grab some of these. No excuses, no yeah, buts, no moral victories. Next 3 games, you got to play very well, and you got to take advantage of this opportunity because the West, and we knew it would be this way, but already it's just a dogfight night in and night out.
Yeah, exactly. You're 2-2 right now, and think about it. You got the 2 against Houston. You got the 1 against Portland. You get those 3, you're 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
We're feeling really good about where this team is right now. And I was encouraged that they were able to compete last night without their guy, without their leader, De'Aaron Fox. I thought, and we talked about it on our show yesterday, Whitey, you know, it's not on Davion. It's not on Malik. Everybody had to raise their game a little bit, and I thought they did. Forget about the shots not falling for Keegan, let's say. How about the defense that he – Kevin Huerter, the shots may not have fallen, but how about the 9 rebounds that he had? So everybody contributed. Colby Jones played extremely well. We'll talk about him over the next couple hours as well. And so I thought, you know, I'm not into moral victories because we're past that. To me, moral victories mean, you know what, we weren't supposed to win that game anyway, but we do have some positives. No, you should have won the game, Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
You should have won the game, Kings. You got to get the stop at the end. You got to defend better in that fourth quarter. But, you know, there were some encouraging signs, I'll say, that came out of that.
Rebounding-wise, they out-rebounded the Warriors 48.
Yes.
36. They pounded them on the glass. They
pounded them. And we talk about the encouraging signs. How about Golden State? Only 7 offensive rebounds that entire game. Remember, in game 7, they feasted on us when it comes to crashing the glass on the offensive rebounds. I will say, you know, when you look at it, they gave up 4 offensive rebounds in that final quarter. And so that's what I think is the difference between, you know, where the Warriors are and where the Kings are right now. And it's really a slim margin. It's not that much of a gap between these two teams, but the Warriors know how to execute. They know who they are when it comes down the stretch of close games. And we saw that last night, 55% from the field. Think about this, Whitey. Through the first 3 quarters, Golden State had 0 block shots.
Mm.
How many did they finish with? 6. They had 6 block shots in the final period. The Warriors stepped up their defense in the fourth quarter, and that's what championship teams do.
Can I share with you the one possession, the one Kings possession that I just haven't been able to get out of my mind. And yeah. I don't know why I'm fixating on this one. Uh-oh. Because, you know, one game, 1-point game, there's a lot of things you can point to. But there was, I think it's about 10 minutes left in the fourth period. And I'm sure you'll remember this possession. Kings have the ball in the half court. Mm-hmm. Ball goes out of bounds. Then they inbound, and Malik loses track of the shot clock.
Yes.
And they don't get a shot. And it was a 1-point game at the time, I thought.
Right.
And I was thinking, you got to get a shot.
You got to get a shot.
And then he's like saying, oh, no one told me. No one talked to me. But if you're the point guard, you got to know.
Yeah, he's on the wing over there. And I'm sitting, and I'm like, I don't think he knows.
Yeah.
You know, on the call, I'm like, he's not aware. It was like 3 seconds, two. Malik, you got to get it up. I don't think he. And then the shot clock ran out. And you would think in that situation, that's the first thing you say.
Yes, yes.
All right, guys, 5 on the clock or something. Like, that should be the reminder. And, you know, honestly.
That one killed me.
If we're being 100% truthful, nobody should have to tell Malik, yes, you want your teammates, Malik, look at the clock, you know. But Malik has to be aware
especially
of that
if
also.
If you're going to be the point guard.
Yeah, he has to be aware of that also. That was a big possession.
Yeah. All right. I don't feel as bad.
You all right? You good?
You good? It still bothers me because that's the type of stuff that, you know, when I coached, I'd bench people for. Shouldn't have. But anyway, yeah. I do think sometimes Malik, his inexperience as a point guard shows. He's a little overexposed this year, in my opinion, as a point guard. He should still continue to play it. He has to, and he was so good at it, especially last year in the playoffs. But sometimes a play like that, to me, shows that, all right, he doesn't have a lot of experience playing point guard at this level.
I mean, you're asking a two guard to be a point, and he does a good job at it, but there's different levels to being a point guard. You know, they always say the point guard is the floor general out there, and you got to be aware. You not only have to know your position, your spot, but you got to know time, situation, where everybody's supposed to be on the floor. And so that's why the great point guards, man, they, you know, the guys like Rajon Rondo and, you know, Chris Paul and all those kind of guys, just how, you know, they understand time and situation. And that's so important. And Malik's done a fantastic job.
Yes.
I'm not going to bash him or anything. He's doing a hell of a job, you know, filling that role in that backup role at point guard. But, you know, in that instance, we needed somebody to be aware of the clock running
down. Right, right. And even on the Sabonis shot, Malik almost lost the dribble, and he had a good game. I'm just saying that's kind of a weak spot here. There's no better option, so I get it. And he has played better at point guard than I think. Well, I know a lot of people, myself included, thought he could, but still that's an area right now without De'Aaron where sometimes, you know, you got to kind of hold your breath a little bit. We're going to take a quick timeout, and Sean Powell from NBA.com is going to join us with a look at everything wild that's going on in the West. And, of course, we're taking your calls all afternoon today, only with you till 4:30 when we get to Monday Night Football. It's the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Today for Thursday Night Football, pardon me, I know I said Monday Night Football. Hal Draper, who had the call last night, NBC Sports California, Whitey Gleason, a lot of people on the chat find some encouraging notes from last night. On the other hand, you got Ultimate Kingpin, who says, not looking for positive signs, looking for a W against the freaking Warriors in this decade.
I love it, Ultimate Kingpin. We're way past positive signs. We're about winning games, you know, and you got to understand, too, the Warriors are going to be there at the end of the season in terms of seeding. And so these next two games against them, one later this month, one in January, you don't want them to have the tiebreaker against you. It could come back to bite you down the stretch.
Nice enough to join us now with more on the Kings, the Warriors, and the Wild West from NBA.com. Outstanding writer Sean Powell. Sean, what stands out to you, sir? Welcome to the show. We appreciate your time. What stands out to you the most about what's going on in the Western Conference 1 week plus into this brand new season?
Well, first of all, everybody's healthy. And for the most part, I mean, the Phoenix Suns might disagree with that statement, but I don't think Devin Booker is going to be out too much longer. He's probably going to return. And I think the Suns will eventually get it right. But look, I mean, the Warriors are who we thought they were. Chris Paul has fit in very well with that team. Same thing for the Denver Nuggets. And after that, it's really a scramble. I mean, the Clippers, we'll see what happens with them, with James Harden coming in. LeBron James, he's in year, what, 3 or is it 21? I can't tell. I can't tell the difference.
No, you're right, Sean. Well. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, and then it's just everybody else. It's so early. You know, obviously, you don't want to create narratives this early. You don't want to jump all in on one team or jump off the good ship Memphis Grizzlies just yet. So we'll just see what happens between now and, say, the holidays.
Sean, I know you were in the building. I thought I saw you Sunday at Golden 1 Center for that big matchup against the Lakers. Just give me your initial thoughts on the Sacramento Kings. Obviously a great year last year. How do they back it up this season?
Well, you want to see growth. You want to see them build on what they did last year. They have a couple strikes against them. Number one, they're not going to catch anybody by surprise this season. I mean, it used to be in the past that, you know, people would circle the Sacramento game on the schedule, and teams would conveniently rest players or, you know, not really take the Kings very seriously. Well, you know, that's not happening anymore. And that's a credit to the Sacramento Kings and what they built there. So they're not catching anybody by surprise. They've got respect. And the other thing is, you know, last year I think they took advantage of certain situations in the West, namely injuries, you know, to some teams that normally would be there, you know, like the Clippers, you know, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard missing a lot of time. Had those players been healthy, I mean, maybe Sacramento wouldn't have finished as high as they did in the West. But I'm nitpicking here. I think the Kings are good. I think they're established. I love De'Aaron Fox. I'm a big time believer in him. You know, the other players just have to, you know, take their game to the next level. Listen to what Mike Brown's telling him. He's a good coach. And like I said, just try to build on what you did last year. And by the way, stop the Warriors at the city limits. Don't bring them anywhere near Sacramento. Then you'll be pretty good.
Sean Powell, nice enough to join us from NBA.com. And Sean, you're a guest here, and we appreciate your time. So we're not going to be rude or anything, but I got to ask you, as you mentioned the Kings roster there, you didn't mention their center, and he seems to be kind of a polarizing figure when it comes to national writers. How good is this guy, Domas Sabonis? Do you think Fox and Sabonis, the two of them, are good enough in terms of their best being their best players to get them into the playoffs and perhaps advance in the playoffs?
You know, I covered the Kings-Warriors playoff series last year, and, you know, again, I thought Sabonis deserved, you know, everything all the awards he got last year also. All that stuff is great, but in the playoffs, he was exposed. I mean, he couldn't hit an outside shot, and I think that, you know, spooked him. All of a sudden, he's passing up shots, and that leads to turnovers. You know, he was outplayed in that series, and he was the better big man. And I came to see them play the Warriors, what was their first home game this season. And I saw some improvement, but again, here's the one thing, and you guys have been around the NBA long enough. The great players get better every year. You know, that they recognize their weaknesses, they work on it over the summer, and they come back with a new twist. And that's a challenge for young players in this league. They have to work on their weaknesses. And with Sabonis, you know, he's got to knock down that jumper. All of a sudden, the defense, they're gonna play him the way they play Russell Westbrook. You know, they're going to be in the next zip code. And they're going to force him to take that jump shot until he proves, gets the respect where the defense is going to play him up. And then you got, you know, look, I mean, Malik Monk, again, he had a very good year last year. Is he going to do the same thing? Harrison Barnes, you know, who's, you know, the veteran on that team. He's off to a decent start this year. But I mean, how much better is he really going to get at this point? You know, and Kevin Herter's off to a slow start. You know, what's he going to do for the rest of the year? Again, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to paint too much of a picture about the Sacramento Kings this year after only a few weeks in the NBA season. But that's just a challenge. Oh, and by the way, so where would they rank right now among NBA teams in California? And it might be number four at the moment, although that can improve. But
you got them at four? Moment,
okay, you've got the Lakers are better. I think Anthony Davis, LeBron James is playing out of his mind. The Clippers with James Harden, even without James Harden, I think the Clippers are a little bit more established. Their only issue is injuries, and we're not even going to mention the Golden State Warriors now.
You know, here's the thing, Sean, and this what frustrates me, I guess, you know, when you know, national people and people in general just talk about the Sacramento Kings. One day I got Charles Barkley saying they're the best team in California. The next day I got you saying they're the worst team in California. Who are the Sacramento Kings? Like, their upside could be really high, but then I feel like there's still a lot of doubters out there.
Well, when I say best, first of all, again, there's like a razor-thin difference between number one and number four. I mean, all those California teams are very good. So there's not a bad team in the bunch. But again, it's going to come down to little things. It's going to come down to, you know, the Sacramento Kings showing growth as young teams should do. It's going to come down for the Clippers to stay healthy. LeBron James played well in his 21st season. And for the Warriors, Chris Paul fitting in. So there's a margin for error for all four of those teams. And so when I say the Kings might be number four, hey, in a couple weeks, it might be number one.
Sean Powell, NBA.com with us. How much of an impact do you expect James Harden to have on the Clippers and on this Western Conference situation?
Oh, man. You know, that's crazy. You know, the thing about what James Harden is, there are a lot of teams that would not touch him. He's too toxic. I mean, they're like, you know, he bailed on the Rockets. He bailed on Brooklyn. You know, he bailed on Daryl Morey and the Philadelphia 76ers. What makes you think he won't bail on us? You know, after a while, you get a reputation, a track record, and it's crazy. Now, look, here's the thing. He's still a good player. He's not MVP James Harden. He's not the James Harden we saw in Houston, but he's still a good player. I just hope for his sake and for the Clippers' sake that he has been humbled to a degree. We all should be humbled. Right? Like Russell Westbrook was humbled when he played for the Lakers. And so all of a sudden, when he came to the Clippers, he had a settled role. And he kind of accepted that. I'm not so sure James Harden has turned the page yet because he's still a good player. He's got an ego. Look, all great players have an ego. But he has to prove to the Clippers and the rest of the league that he can fit in with that team. And he's willing to accept whatever role it takes, sacrifice, to try to win that first championship. Mm. If he doesn't, that thing is going to fall like a house of cards.
Wow. That's big-time stuff right there from Sean Powell. Sean, let's stick with the Clippers and that Lakers matchup last night. How refreshing was it to see all the stars actually in a game and playing? Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron, AD, everybody was healthy last night.
Hey, let me tell you something. If I put money on what I thought was going to happen and who would play, I'd be broke right now. There's no way I thought Kawhi Leonard and or Paul George were going to play that game. Now, having said that, they don't play again until, I think, Monday. They had like, it's a weird little quirk in the schedule where they had like 5 days off, which for them is actually pretty good because now James Harden could whip himself into shape. You know, he's kind of over the calorie cap right now. So, you know, he's got to get that conditioning down. But yeah, it was good to see them all on the floor. And when the NBA came up with the player participation policy, they had this in mind. You know, national TV game, big game, LA teams, two title contenders. You wanted to see the stars on the floor. And the good thing is, they all played well. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, all those guys played well. This is what the NBA needs. And look, I don't want to sound like an old school head here, right? Although this is my 36th year covering the NBA. But back in the day, this was never an issue. Guys showed up and played. This was never an issue. And I get it. You know, you want to protect your investments. If you're paying a guy $45, $50 million, you want to make sure he's there in April, May, and June. I do get that. But I just don't understand the reluctance to play basketball. The love of the game should always take over. And you should be out there playing. Larry Bird played with a bad back. He was resting on the floor in front of the bench. I don't know if you guys remember.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's what it takes. And I'm not so sure. And again, I don't want to sound like, you know, old guy.
Old guy, get off my lawn. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. But, man, the love of the game, the love of the game should always be first and foremost with NBA players.
Sean Powell, a great follow on X. You see him on NBA.com, NBA TV. Sean, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll talk to you again very soon.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Sean. Thanks, man.
Sean Powell sounded like, you know, he was trying hard not to say bad things about the Kings.
I'll be honest, right? Dude, when he said that they're the fourth team in California, man, I almost was about to wave to Jay, cut his mic, cut him off. Like, here, don't, you know what? And that's the level of disrespect, once again, that the Sacramento Kings get from some of the national media. I'm going by the eye test. Forget the names on the back of the jerseys, Whitey. You know me. Forget about the names on the back of the jerseys. What have you done for me lately? The Sacramento Kings were the third best team in the Western Conference. And he talked about injuries and everything like that. LeBron's old. You know, Kawhi Paul George, they've had injury history. And so maybe right now he can say that. Talk to me in February, March, and April. I want to see where things
stand. And was it me or did he sound like he's at the foot of the bed and his wife's asleep and he doesn't want to, I don't want to wake her up. I'll tell you guys, but my wife's sleeping.
I think that's how Sean is, though. I think that's just his thing. Just his way.
we appreciate his time. And we appreciate your time. And we got something special for you when we come back. Drapes Tanks, baby!
Yeah!
Yeah,
I'm fired up.
Drive Guys, Sactown Sports. You got the Drive Guys, Whitey and Drapes, the day after that tough loss. By the way, real quick note on our guest, Sean Powell, we appreciate his time. And there were a number of Kings fans on the chat that didn't appreciate his views on the Kings, but he had a good fourth quarter because we have some comments here that people appreciated the fact that, you know, Sean said it's about the love of the game, and some people appreciated his comments about Harden being over the calorie cap. So I thought he salvaged things nicely.
Yeah, a little bit. For us. But, you know, I'm looking at the YouTube chat, and, you know, there are a few people in there who might not be Kings fans. They may be posing right there. You know, ultimate kingpin. Has Sabonis ever won a jump ball in his entire career? A Sabonis jump ball is simply a turnover. See, so, you know, we got
today.
Some posers in the chat. I don't know, some closet Warrior fans or something like that in the chat.
Yeah, but he's the one who earlier said he was so mad because I don't need moral victories. I need to beat the Kings.
Yeah.
So that's just
a frustrated King fan right now. Okay. A
lot of frustration. But we're going to make you feel better now because it's time for, we have this after every Kings game. It's time for Drapes Takes.
Calm down, Lion. Calm down. Take it easy, man. Just take it easy.
All right, Drapes Takes. We're about to kick it off. Jay Johnson, you right there? Cut the music off, Jay. Cut the music off. I got to go to my single shot here. I'm talking to you listeners on the YouTube chat in the car right now. Here's the thing about Drapes Takes. It's unbiased. It's unfiltered. I'm going to give you the realest synopsis and takeaway from the Sacramento Kings game. That's what I'm about to give you. You might not like it, Whitey. You might not like it, Kings fans, but I'm going to give it to you. Jay, run that back for me. Let's get into Drapes Takes here on Sactown Sports 1140.
Calm down. Take it easy, man. Just take it easy.
I'm going to start off with my guy, Davion Mitchell. Davion Mitchell, to me, was the most impressive part of yesterday's game. Don't talk about the defense. Don't talk about Domantas Sabonis' points. Kobe Jones, I don't want to talk about him at this moment. I thought Davion Mitchell came in and gave you everything you wanted from a backup point guard who was thrust into the starting position last night for the Sacramento Kings. He gave you 13 points. He gave you 4 dimes. How about the 3 steals as well? He was great defensively. And so if De'Aaron Fox does have to miss a couple of more games, I'm firmly confident that things will be okay because I thought Davion Mitchell did a hell of a job last night, White.
He has a pretty jump shot. I've been saying that since the playoffs last year. He's shown flashes of it, worked on it all season long. I think he's going to have a real nice season shooting the ball beyond the arc.
Exactly. And Katie and I talked about it on the broadcast last night. Davion put in the work with Brandon Payne, who's Steph Curry's shooting coach. They tweaked a couple of things on his 3-point shot, and we see the difference. Davion spent this time, obviously, here in Sacramento, here in the United States, but he was out in Madrid, he was out in Costa Rica, and he took assistant coaches on the road with him. So this dude is putting in the work, and I think over these next couple of days, we're going to, games, we're going to see it pay off.
Question, does Brandon Payne have time to work with Kevin Herter? Does he have any room on his schedule?
Mike Brown might have to hire him on staff, right? Like, he's just going to have to be the shooting guru of the entire Sacramento Kings team. But this is Drapes Takes, Whitey. This isn't Whitey's take, so don't try to interrupt, big fella. I am going to give some love to my guy, Kobe Jones. It was our first time seeing him in extended regular season action. And you know what? He didn't hurt you at all.
Nope.
In fact, he looked heady out there. He looked like he belonged, and he made some plays out there defensively, taking the ball to the basket. I thought Kobe Jones in 17 minutes plus, he was tremendous last night.
And he gave you a little bit of everything, and he said, that's what I do.
That's what he does. He is an all-around player. He's not going to get you 30 points. He's not going to get you 15 rebounds. Not going to get you 12 assists. But he's a stat stuffer. Like, he's a guy that's going to, you know, get you 10 points, going to get you 6 or 7 rebounds, 4 or 5 assists, play great defense. I thought in that environment, Golden State rivalry game, Chase Center crowd. He played extremely well. I don't know how he's going to earn minutes going forward, but if I'm Mike Brown, that's a great luxury to have.
Yeah,
to know that you can go
like
to that guy.
He's
going to
earn those minutes. I loved his first basket. He beats Paul. He's at the baseline, and there was a little bit of an awkward shot, a leaping leaner. That's an easy shot to pass up, but he took that aggressive shot and knocked it down.
Exactly, and so give Kobe Jones a lot of credit. My third and final Drapes take. And this is the one, Sacramento Kings fans, you're not going to like, but I got to call it out like I see it. We want to talk about the defense today and how great it was. And sure, they forced 18 turnovers, I think it was, last night from the Golden State Warriors, but they only scored 18 points off those turnovers. So if you're going to force turnovers, A, make sure you make the other team pay on the other end. Sacramento committed 15 turnovers, which led to 20 Golden State Warriors points. And so they got to do a better job of not only playing defense, getting the turnovers, but scoring off of that. But with that being said, Whitey, we all say it was a great defensive effort from the Kings, right? Take away the third quarter, Golden State shot 54% from the game. That's not great. And if I'm Mike Brown during practice today, that's one of the first things I'm talking. You know what, guys? You showed flashes, but it has to be more consistent. I don't think it was consistent last night. Sure, you held them to 102 points. I think a lot of that, Golden State, they had butterfingers, they had stone hands, they turned the ball over a lot. But when they actually shot the ball, 54% in the first, second, and fourth quarters combined.
It's a great point. Me personally, I was just so encouraged by the stretch, especially in the third quarter, of some impressive defense. It's night and day with what we see from this team sometimes, and we know that's their focus, and that's really their path to improvement. So I chose to be encouraged by that, even though, as you say, to suggest that they had a great defensive night all the way through the whole 48 minutes, that's probably a bit of a stretch.
And here's what the Kings have to understand. And they showed it a little bit last year with their fourth quarter defense being a top 10 defense in the league. It's not about whether you play defense or not. It's whether you play defense when the game's on the line. And last night in that fourth period, I said it earlier, Golden State shot 55%. They scored 28 points in that fourth period. So what happened was, sure, the Kings might have played defense, but Golden State played better defense. Golden State, six block shots, I believe, in that fourth period. Yes, Golden State had a steal in that fourth period. They were 11 of 20 from the field. Sacramento, 7 of 21. And so I think there's some lessons to be learned from last night. I know we wake up feeling encouraged. You know, no De'Aaron Fox. We were right there. But this team has to be better in situational defense, too. And I thought last night in that fourth quarter, they weren't as good as Mike Brown wanted them
to be. I think you're right. I don't think there's any disputing that. But what's frustrating is the Kings did themselves no favors. They did their defense no favors. That fourth quarter, they scored 22 points. That was their lowest production of the night. And when you start missing shots, and they missed so many makeable shots last night, whether De'Aaron Fox was there or not. And you start missing those in the fourth quarter and things start snowballing and you've had a pretty solid defensive effort. All of a sudden, you make it a lot tougher on yourself when the Warriors are running downhill at you.
Yeah, and a lot of times, too, what happens, and this happened last night, teams, veteran teams, teams that have been to the mountaintop, they know how to ratchet it up.
They do.
They know how to go to another level.
Magic used to call it winning
time. Winning time, exactly. And the Warriors, what happened, the reason why they won that game, because it was winning time. They outscored them 28-22 in that fourth quarter. I don't know if the Kings got tight. Did the Warriors' defense turn up a little bit? You know, because there's levels to this. And as great as the Kings played defensively, you know, third quarter, they held them to 6 for 20. Historically, the Warriors are an amazing third quarter team, so I was encouraged by that. But now, you got to do that again in the fourth quarter when it matters the most. Let me pull up the box score one more time, Whitey, because I'm getting frustrated about this. Because in the fourth quarter, you had done a great job against Steph Curry all game long, but then he goes off for 7 in the fourth quarter. Klay Thompson was a plus 8 in the fourth quarter alone. And so you got to do a better job, man, when it comes. Klay Thompson had 3 block shots. Klay Thompson can't jump up on a curb anymore right now because of all the injuries. And he had 3 block shots. And so that's why I'm frustrated. That's why I'm discouraged. The game was there for the taking, and the Kings just didn't make enough plays down the stretch.
Right. I know a lot of fans listening to the station today are frustrated looking on Twitter, Fans are frustrated by some of the missed free throws. For the night, the Kings were 78%, but we know that Sabonis missed a couple big ones. What'd you think of that, and what do you think of that as an area of improvement going forward? 18 for 23 last night, but it wasn't so much how many they missed as it was when they missed them.
Yeah, you know, the numbers aren't bad, right?
Right.
You know, it's not bad. But Sabonis, I think, missed a pair late in that game, and that just can't happen. You know, and he did come back and make a pair, I do believe,
you're right.
After that. But, you know, that can't happen. You're giving away freebies. And so especially in a game like this where the margins are so small, you know, 18 of 23 – on the whole, like you said, that's not bad. But on the road, you miss a couple. That gets the crowd into it. You know, it's bigger than just those two free throws. And we saw that last night.
Yeah, that was just another example of how they missed so many shots. Not just free throws, but shots right at the rim. That's what's frustrating. That game was right there. As you know, if you saw it, you broadcast it.
Right there
for the taking. And they couldn't quite get over the hump. You know, tip of the cap to Clay and all that. But that was a game the Kings should have had. Well, we're going to take a timeout, pardon me, when we come back. We're going to get the latest on De'Aaron Fox from De'Aaron Fox himself, what he had to say this afternoon on when he may be back. That's next. Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason, Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Last season, the Sac.
What's up with De'Aaron Fox? We're going to find out in just a moment here with the Drive Guys. We're getting a ton of comments, as you can imagine. On the text line, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. On the YouTube chat, as you can imagine, Drapes, most of the comments are about the Texas Rangers winning the World Series last.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did that happen? I missed the World Series. I didn't miss a game. I missed the entire World Series. That's on me. That's my fault.
I did have to do a little back and forth because Zach Gallen was pitching a freaking no-hitter.
Oh, really?
For five innings. But, yeah, then Boch and the Rangers got it done, so... I'm kidding, though, about all the comments. We have some interesting thoughts here. Ka Jeong, and I apologize if I'm saying that wrong. He says, what about McGee on offense? I think he was trying to do too much. He was trying to facilitate the ball like Sabonis and doing sky hooks like Kareem. Is Vail doing too much on offense?
Maybe at times, but I think that's why Mike Brown brought him in, actually, is to facilitate like Sabonis. We talked... last year, when Sabonis went out of the game, they had to change their entire offense. They didn't have a backup big that could do what Sabonis did. And I'm not saying JaVale McGee is DeMontis Sabonis, but his playmaking ability is something he's proud of. It's something, you know, he feels like he can do. In fact, he was asked about it on the All the Smoke podcast with Matt Barnes. And he said, it's funny, he said, you know, it's something he likes to do. And, you know, his reputation of sometimes taking wild shots and things like that, getting out of sorts offensively, he said it was because as a big, coaches don't allow you to showcase what you really do. They say block shots, run the floor, and rebound. And he said, during the offseason, trust me, I'm working on my three, my step back game, my handles. That I was, you know, playing guard in high school, all this stuff. And so I think, you know, when he does get out of sorts, it's because, you know what? There's more to his game that he wants to show. I wasn't too upset. I thought JaVale was fantastic last night, especially defensively. So.
Caesar 916 says Davion's a dog. If he can keep his offense consistent, sky's a limit for him.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see more of that consistent shooting.
Yes.
Fingers crossed. Manny Too Legit, love the takes, Drapes, and then your guy, Ultimate Kingpin, again. Let's see. Somebody, oh, yeah. Nobody Know 5 says, y'all, stop it. We have 78 more games to go. And then your boy Ultimate Kingpin says, how many of those 78 are more important than the two we already lost? And he says, none of them.
Oh, man. Ultimate Kingpin is fired up. These are like the most important games in Kings history based on Ultimate Kingpin's reaction. Mm-hmm. Calm down, young fella. It'll be okay. It'll be okay.
Man. Things will be a lot better when De'Aaron Fox is back. When is he going to be back? De'Aaron spoke to that today. Now, this was after practice?
Yeah, after practice today.
Here's De'Aaron Fox talking about when... he will return to the lineup.
Whenever it's not hurting or whenever the pain is less than where it is now. I don't want to rush back, but I want to make sure I'm ready.
Yeah, and it's going to be a while, right? I mean, we're here in...
I don't know. Shams is saying this weekend, maybe, you know, in Houston. And I would be shocked, obviously, the way he went down, had to be pulled out of the game and everything, had to be helped back into the locker room, and we know how sprained ankles are. And like our guy Ultimate Kingpin said, or nobody knows that, there's 78 more games. And so I don't know if I want to rush him back for these two games in Houston.
Yeah, here's De'Aaron Fox describing how much pain he's been in lately.
Oh, like a four. I feel like it's more like the impact of hitting the ground and pushing back is what hurts. But I feel like I'm almost there. I feel like I'm close.
I don't know. To me, a pro athlete who's had a million sprained ankles saying a four, that's not nothing.
You think that's pretty high, huh? You think that's on the scale of grading it on a curve.
If I'm like a two, I'm almost back. I don't know. I just think I'm going to be surprised if he's back anytime really soon. I hope so. But, I mean, that was, you know, what's a severe sprain and a moderate sprain. And the human body can only do so much to recover unless he, I don't know, maybe he needs to talk to Aaron Rodgers and get the sounds of right. Dolphins mating and all that. Maybe that would help.
Yeah, maybe some magic cream or something like that. Rub on it. But
I'm expecting the worst and hoping for the best.
I was thinking 2 weeks probably.
Yeah.
He'd be out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with Shams report and now De'Aaron talking, it could be this weekend, which is crazy. It won't even be a week on right. Saturday if he plays against Houston.
That would be incredible.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, and here's De'Aaron on how long he was thinking he would be out.
I mean, I never felt like I was going to miss like 2 or 3 weeks or anything like that, but I knew it would take a few days or a week or so.
So that's De'Aaron Fox wow. today on where he is, where he's feeling, and it looks like there are a lot of indications he could be back this weekend. I'll believe it when I see it, but that sounds great.
And he said a few days or a week. Like, think about that. Like, when he went out, it was like, oh, man, you know, we're thinking about 65-game threshold. Is this going to mess him up? He about only missed 2 games,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy to think about. Like I said before, though, you got to be careful with this. You know, you want to make sure he's healthy 100%, no pain, because this team can withstand, like we saw it last night. They've proven to me that they can withstand a De'Aaron Fox loss for a couple of games here and there. And so, selfishly, personally, I would sit him out in Houston, bring him back at home against Portland. That gives you, you know, about 10 days in between when you had the injury. And so the fact that he might play this weekend, that scares me a little bit, Whitey. Scares me.
I know what you mean. And I know it could be wrong here because last year Sabonis played through a broken thumb and he looked like he was 100%, didn't he? I mean, he played great.
Looked fine, yeah.
Yeah, you remember Isaiah Thomas in the finals against the Lakers on a badly sprained ankle.
Yes.
He was phenomenal, so it can happen. Players can play at a high level through these injuries. I just think that the Kings this year, if they're going to get anywhere close to where they hope to get to, they're going to need De'Aaron Fox at 100%.
I agree, you know, and this is not about the short term. This is about the long term.
Right.
You know, this team, you know, if this was April and they were battling for a playoff spot and they needed him, sure, I could see that. But it's a long season. You don't want something that's lingering. You know, look at Steph Curry early in his careers and all the ankle troubles he had.
Oh, there were people
had,
that said they shouldn't have signed
right,
him.
Right, right. Yeah. It's something that lingered on and he ultimately, you know, got it taken care of with the you know, the braces and everything. He's good now. But if you're De'Aaron Fox, you don't want to come back too early and then twist it again. And then you're out for a month, let's say. And so I'm worried. I'm nervous about this. And De'Aaron, here's the thing. As great as you are, De'Aaron Fox, Mr. Clutch Player, your team is good enough to withstand missing you for a few games, I think. We're in a much better position.
You guys had the graphic last night. Last year without him, and it was... They were 2-5, 7-9 or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't even know if it was that many games.
No, it wasn't even that.
3-5, something like that.
I think it might have been. So he missed 9 games last year. So I think it was 3-5, 3-6, something like that.
Yeah,
4-5, one of those.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
And this is a better team this year. And so if you can go 500 without De'Aaron Fox, slightly above 500, I take that. You know, this isn't. And this isn't a 3 week, 4 week kind of injury. We're talking De'Aaron, miss 3 or 4 games. That's all we're asking. Mm-hmm. We're not just saying go out there, miss 1 game and come back. Miss 3 or 4 games, a week and a half. We should be A-okay, especially against the caliber of competition that we're about to face.
You know, the funny thing about Steph Curry and his ankles is that you've heard the stories, I'm sure, that when the Warriors made that trade, they got Bogut. And for the Bucks, it was, do you want Monte Ellis, or do you want Steph?
Think about that.
And the Bucks like, Curry's ankles.
This guy's shot, right? Yeah.
We'll take Monte.
Can you imagine?
They had the choice.
They had the choice. Wow, that's going. That's like Jordan and Sam Bowie in them,
it
you
is.
Know, like
it
back
is.
In the day. Wow.
Yeah, it's understandable, but you look at the box score, you watch the game, it's pretty clear that in that fourth quarter, one of the reasons the Kings offense started to get derailed a little bit is because they missed Fox.
I was going to ask you, you know, could you noticeably see them missing De'Aaron Fox? But let me ask you this. Yes, De'Aaron Fox is clutch. He's missed their fourth quarter. But for the Kings to be as great as we want them to be, should we have to rely on De'Aaron Fox so much in the fourth? And so
but
other guys got
to
step up, right?
Yeah, but some of that's got to have to be him having more trust in his teammates, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess, you know.
I mean, you can't go run up and demand the ball from him.
I guess, and you know, but to your point, he has to realize, especially a guy like Keegan Murray, Kevin Huerter could hit big shots. Like, this team is good enough offensively to still run your sets. And we've seen Kevin Huerter hit big shots this year, last year against Utah at home. And so De'Aaron Fox, the evolution of his game is going to come. Sure, you're clutch, you can get it. But now what's going to happen in it has started happening. Teams are going to start double-teaming you, taking the ball out of your hands late in games. So you have to be able to trust your teammates. And so I'm hoping his teammates will gain some confidence from this stretch. And when he comes back, he can see, you know what? I don't always have to be Mr. Fourth Quarter. Mm-hmm. I can rely on my teammates.
It's a great point you raised, though, because we're not there yet. Teams haven't forced him to do that.
If not
you're
yet.
De'Aaron Fox, hey, why should the offense be more diversified? I can get to any spot on the floor I want. No
because
one has been able
when
to stop
he's
me.
Out, though, we don't know what to do. Like we look like chickens with our head cut off on offense sometimes. And so if it was a more natural offense late in games, guys would be more used to getting the ball in clutch situations, shooting in clutch situations. I know Domantas Sabonis made the shot, but a bank shot from the pretty much close to straight, that's –
No,
yeah,
I'm with you.
It's a little too much gas in that.
More diversified offense is just harder to defend.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
When we come back, not to claim a moral victory here, none of that, but there were some bright spots for the Kings last night, despite another spleen-bending defeat to the Dubs. We'll break those down with you next year. Drive, guys, on Sacktown Sports.